You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about rescuing history from an earthquake disaster. We finish our Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada series with the story of Masana Tapia family. Rick and Judy talked to his son, Ramon, of Sukat Interiors, about how his mom and dad went back to their origins in Mexico City after a disastrous 1985 earthquake that a lot of people know about, that destroyed a lot of, you know, Mexico City, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of Mexico, generally. Yeah. And they ended up bringing back a new designer movement to their home of Vancouver. Of course, stay tuned for our tax sales and business takeaways coming up.
We talked to Ramon the Fourth, Rick and Mike, to get the story of Sukat. I love that, Ramon the Fourth.
Mm-hmm.
You must really like that name.
Yeah. Well, his dad certainly did.
Yeah, and his grandpa.
And his grandpa and everyone else.
Our story does not begin in Vancouver, though, but in Mexico City. In September 19th, 1985, an 8.5 devastating earthquake hit Mexico City, which killed at least 5,000 people.
Yeah.
And was followed by two aftershocks over 7.0. Now, you know, we had that Northridge earthquake was like 6.8 or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so to get an 8.5 and then yeah, two sevens,
yeah,
is,
that's crazy.
Is ridiculous.
Ramon and Georgina were architects in Mexico. They had moved, before this earthquake had hit, to Vancouver to work as designers because they weren't licensed as architects in, you know, Vancouver.
Yeah, there's a lot of different rules and laws.
Yeah, go through the whole thing, you know, getting certified and everything. When the earthquake hit, they traveled back to Mexico in the wake of the earthquake to rescue, probably see all of their family,
their
family, of course. But they also rescued shattered facades of a grand 18th century building from a masonry grinder. Mm-hmm. In other words, the place had fallen down, and they were just taking these things and just cleaning up the city.
Yeah, they needed to get all the mess out of the way so they could rebuild.
200 years old, and they saw something there. They said, this is an amazing piece of history, and it's going to go down. And, you know, you've seen that all over the world. Earthquakes destroy, you know, tsunamis.
Mm-hmm. Fires.
Tornadoes. Hurricanes, you know, they just destroy historical things.
Yeah,
you don't see them
because they're a lot less, you know.
Yeah,
they're old. They've been there for a while, and they're maybe not as structurally sound.
Well, not too long after your mom, you, and Devin and me went to see Assisi,
mm-hmm,
you know, St. Francis of Assisi,
mm-hmm,
Earthquake knocked down the cathedral that we were in.
So we got it. Just in time.
Well, worse than that is that one of the aftershocks also brought the ceiling down while they were looking at it, the engineers, and it killed some of the engineers.
Oh, no.
And so, I mean, I'm sure this kind of stuff happened in Mexico in 85, but these aftershocks are so big. You know, these people are trying to get in there and save people and assess the damage, and they're, you know, it's very dangerous. So they were trying to clean up the city, and this great facade of this 18th century building was just going to be demolished. So they were able to get a hold of it, to buy it, you know, and to get it out of there. And they got into 32 containers on ships.
Yeah, huge shipping containers.
32.
That's a lot. That's, it seems like the top of the deck.
Yeah.
It's just,
well, I don't know.
This stuff.
Well, I mean, 32 is an amazing number because that was Sandy Koufax's number for the Dodgers.
Okay. Sandy Koufax. Good to know. Did they call him that because he loved the beach?
Well, it wasn't easy to transform this huge financial outlay to a money-making venture. You know, it was, you know, you got this huge facade and all these things. And how do you sell
shipping
this?
Shipping costs. And yeah.
How do you sell this? You know, in fact, they almost reached their financial end. That they were ready to go back to Mexico because it just wasn't going to work. You know, they had this great vision of transforming this excellent 200-year-old facade into different pieces and ingrain it into the architecture in Vancouver. and they were about ready to give up. And then this guy, this local designer named David Vance, latched onto their vision, and he got it, which is really interesting because so many times people have visions, but nobody else can see them.
Yeah, yeah. It's that artistic, you know,
yeah.
Internal spark that it's really hard to translate to telling other yeah. people.
Yeah. It goes back to the old movie Amadeus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, Hearn director? Do you think, what do you think, was this, His Highness? He says, yeah. It has too many notes.
Too many notes. Which notes would you like me to take out?
I know.
I believe is what how Mozart responded.
I have to remember to say that to your brother when he plays one of his pieces sometime.
Yeah, you should.
I have to say that. I like it, but
he loves that movie, so I think I know.
But anyway, they were a big hit. They were a big hit after this. Everybody started to see their vision, which is really cool. But before they sold all these pieces, because there are going to run out, I mean, there was only 32 containers. they casted them into molds in the 1990s.
So that they could redo it
right.
if they needed more.
And we saw those molds. We were in the store. We mm-hmm. saw the molds that came from the original 200-year-old thing that were like over fireplaces and things like that. Really neat stuff. We have some pictures on our website, ramblingbusiness.com, and on Facebook, the Facebook page of this episode, number 79, under the same title, Rescuing History from an Earthquake Disaster, if you want to see what these look like. Now, they would put these things in different places around Vancouver. They would be in restaurants and hotels. And as you go around Vancouver, you could see the fingerprints of, you know, the Masana Tapia family and all this stuff, which is really cool. You know, their vision worked.
Yeah, and now it's transforming Vancouver generally.
Yeah.
So it's like sort of bringing Mexico to Vancouver
right.
and transforming the architectural style there.
Right. Now, they just didn't stop there. They had expanded their designs beyond just fireplace mantles, for example, but it included furniture and works of art that also dealt with the concept. And one of the things that you'll see on our website, there was this jeweled skull with horns on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That I took a picture of because it was just too cool looking. And they said they actually, it's pretty popular sales. So they actually did a great job of actually bringing Mexico, as you said, and great history out of a disaster and really enhanced the history of Mexico.
If you want to know more about Suquet, go to www.suquet.ca. That's how you spell Suquet.
That's right. And CA is not from California.
That's true. It's from Canada. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales, tax tales, tax tales, tax tales, tax tales.
Tax tales. Oh, woo. And since we're talking about Canada, you know, a wonderful place for gold panning, at least in the old days.
Yes.
We thought you'd talk about how the Yukon taxes gold.
Sergeant Preston of the Yukon.
Yes.
Do you have any idea who that is?
No.
It was a radio drama program in the 1930s.
I found it easier to just agree, yeah, and not have to hear about the history here.
His dog name was Scout.
Oh, is that where all the dogs named Scout came from?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, that's the history. So the Yukon taxes gold that's mined in the territory and charges a royalty of 2.5% on the value, which you see is like, oh, man, that's a lot of,
yeah.
a lot of money. It's
yeah.
probably a big a big windfall for them. Unfortunately, according to the National Post, there's a catch. The Yukon applies the tax based on the value of gold in ounces. And the value of golden ounces in the Yukon was fixed in 1906. So it's only $15 an ounce, according to how they
yeah,
tax
right.
it, which is great. Gold is, you know, $1,500
yeah.
an ounce.
I know. And what's amazing is that goes back to one of our previous things we talked about, the gold standard, remember?
Mm-hmm, yeah,
it's about
yeah.
the same time.
Instead of fiat currency.
Fiat. It's a car.
Yeah, that's... And an economic thing. Yeah, so since they only count gold as $15 an ounce instead of $1,500 an ounce, they only get 37 cents per ounce of gold that people pull out.
Mm.
So maybe they should change that to a more modern number.
And stop using those old scales.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's time for a travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do around the Vancouver area.
When you are in Vancouver, go a little south into the main part of Vancouver and check out the Van Dusen Botanical Garden. Now that's 55 acres, and I wonder how big that is compared to Central Park in New York.
I don't know.
I have to look at that.
We should have done research before this, shouldn't
we?
I know.
I don't do enough research.
I don't have my phone on me, so I guess we'll just have to keep going.
Well, this is in the center of Vancouver, though. Recent visitors thought the garden was really peaceful. And it has several sections, including a stone garden and a hedge maze.
Hedge maze.
Remember the last time you were in one of those?
No.
Remember Hawaii?
Oh, yeah. The Dole Pineapple
That's
Factory.
Right. That's right. That's right. They had a hedge maze. Yeah, that was great.
Were those tall hedges, or were we just walking around
they were
pineapples?
They were tall. Yeah, all right. No, they were tall.
Okay.
We couldn't find you.
That's because I was in there with a Dole Whip. I didn't want to be found. I wanted to be alone with my sweet treat. Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast.
The first thing is the most obvious one. Pay attention to your clients. Don't turn to them and say, "No soup for you."
Yeah, that's not great. The second thing to think about is you have to determine what sets you apart from other designers. Ramon and Georgina introduced this 200-year-old architectural pieces from Mexico to Vancouver, which had never seen anything like that.
Right.
And so they used their heritage and their basically helping save history in order to create a design aesthetic that everyone would see as their own.
Yeah. The third thing is what I learned from Ramon the Fourth and Rick and Mike is that ask your clients questions and make sure you ask them the right questions because you could learn so much what they want if you just ask them some simple questions.
And then you pair that with number four, which is form a basis for your design concept. In finding out what your customers want, you can look at the stuff that you already have and match those together and have a design concept that is, you know, easily sellable to people depending on what they want.
Yeah. And what's so amazing is that, you know, as you walk in these rooms, these showrooms they have, I'm sure that's not everything they have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they have a lot of stuff. So they got to take things from their mind and what they know is an inventory and put it all together. Which means the last one is always take an objective view of what's working and what's not working. Don't fall in love with one of your products and say, "Oh, I just wish somebody would buy this because it's so cool," and then nobody wants it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to be realistic about what your customers want. Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. We have one from Brian who says, "I'm thinking about getting a car for my business, and should I buy or lease it?"
Well, it always comes down, Brian, to the lease contract because some of them really screw you over.
Yeah.
You know, I've known people that have gotten cars leased, and because they were limited in mileage, which they all are, I think, that they end up paying quite a lot of money for their car lease. At the end, when they turn their car back in.
Yeah, especially if you're using it for a company car and you're driving it around all the time.
Right. Yeah. So you have to be careful that look at the lease, compare leases, all right, between different leasing companies before you do that. Now, the one thing that a lease does for you is that you don't have this huge down payment to put down. You know, they may want 10% or something like that, or a couple $1,000 or $5,000 down payment for a car. And you don't need that for a lease. So
and
that's
plus
a good thing.
A lot of them cover maintenance as well. So you don't have to deal with that recurring bill.
And the last point is that if you're going to buy a car, there's one added addition to that. And that is that you're probably paying less than you would on a lease if you were to then turn around and buy the car out to the lease. But the second thing is that once you've used the car as long as you want to use it, assuming you haven't run into a wall,
Yeah.
Or scratched the sides and backing into a pole like your sister did.
Driven into a lake.
Driven into a lake. You have your down payment for your next car.
Yeah.
If it's paid off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what makes it so good, that you have an asset that you are driving around that you could actually convert into a newer asset later on.
Oh, and there's actually something interesting for California specifically, and any states that do this. If you're in a business that's eco-friendly, or you want to portray yourself as eco-friendly, a lot of the government subsidies and state subsidies for electric cars, if you lease an electric car, that will be passed. That savings will be passed along to you by the leasing company. So electric cars are pretty affordable to lease, which would be good if you have, say, a business with solar panels on top that you don't have to pay for gas then.
Right. Yeah.
Cutting another cost.
Well, I didn't know that.
That's all we have for this week. Tune in next week when we're going to leave of Canada, Vancouver.
Bye.
See you later. And head back across the border. So long. Thanks for all the poutine. and we're going to head all the way back to California to look at economic powerhouse that everyone knows, especially since that TV show aired, Silicon Valley. So until then, I'm Brandon.
This is Rick. And thank you for letting us get into your business, no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.